DW Africa Link.
It is Monday, October the 28th. Hello and welcome to DW Africa Link. With me, Crispin Mwakideo.
I am Zipporah Nyambura. Thanks for tuning in, whether you are listening to us on our partner radio stations or on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We look forward to getting your comments and feedback.
And now coming up, a Mozambican Electoral Commission has some harsh words on the just concluded election.
Today we are witnessing here a national shame. The results that was announced by the president of the National Election Commission do not reflect the truth.
And Nigeria reacts to the killing of the so-called Islamic State IS group leader after a raid by the U.S. forces.
Killing the ISIS leader will demoralize the militants and it will affect them seriously.
By exiting him alone doesn't mean that the crisis is over. It's still afresh and others will still emanate, who will take over the mantle of leadership and continue with what they are doing.
Stay tuned to these stories and more coming right after we hear this global news roundup.
DW News.
I'm Christina Krippel with the DW News. The killing of the leader of the so-called Islamic State or ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, in a raid by US special forces, was greeted with relief around the world for what is widely seen as an important step in a fight against global terrorism. But Syrian Kurdish forces, who claim to have enabled the US operation, said on Monday they were on high alert in anticipation of possible riots or attacks on the guards in the prisons and displaced people camps in northeastern Syria. Political analyst Abu Bakar Baba from Nigeria, a country fighting its own terrorist group Boko Haram, told DW that he does not believe that killing one leader will solve the problem.
The solution is to dialogue with those who are piloting the affairs of the crisis. Sit down with them. What is their demand? What is the way forward? Then we'll find a solution, a lasting solution that will bring peace to the entire world.
Two studies released jointly today by human rights organizations, Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch in the Tanzanian capital of Dar es Salaam, accused the government of increasingly restricting freedom of opinion and the press. Since President John Magufuli took office 3 years ago, the government enacted several laws to hamper the work of journalists, opposition parties and non-governmental organizations, the investigations say. Presidential and parliamentary elections in Tanzania are scheduled for next year. Official election results announced on Sunday say Mozambican President Filipe Nyusi won a second five-year mandate with 73% of the vote. His party, the ruling Frelimo, also won in the legislative and provincial polls, improving on its results from 2014. The opposition alleges fraud and demands re-elections. This news is brought to you by DW in Bonn. After the European Union agreed on Monday to delay the British departure from the bloc until January 31st of next year, British politicians were set to vote this evening on whether to hold an early election. Prime Minister Boris Johnson wants a December 12th election, but looks unlikely to get the required two-thirds majority, says analyst Tony Travers from the London School of Economics.
As when and if they don't get that, they'll look at the proposals put forward by some of the smaller opposition parties with a view to having a slightly earlier general election, but crucially with no deal ruled out. The government didn't want to do that, but it may be that it has no choice other than to go for that.
The German party, the Left, won elections in the eastern German state of Thuringia on Sunday, the first time this happened in the country since the fall of the wall. The far-right Alternative for Germany, AfD, also chalked up a success, doubling its votes and overtaking Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democrats. Along with the outcome of May's European Parliament election and the previous state votes, Sunday's election underlined a picture of eroding support for traditional mainstream parties. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Krippel.
You're listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Thank you for joining us on our Facebook page there, DW Africa. I see a number of you there Nofang Zitaka says he's watching from Ambazonia. When you have Ngongzong Jean-Marie writing, greetings from Bamenda, and many more of you. We look forward to getting your feedback and comments on these stories we're covering.
Right, and we begin the show in Mozambique. News that incumbent President Filipe Nyusi has won re-election in a predictable landslide victory has sparked divided opinions among politicians, the people and the Electoral Commission. The National Election Commission, CNE, announced Nyusi won the elections with 73% of the vote ahead of the main opposition candidate Osufo Mumade of the Renamo Party, a former rebel group.
The opposition has, however, dismissed the election as a massive fraud, claiming their supporters were highly intimidated. Joining us now is DW's Guilherme Curaya da Silva from our Portuguese Africa department, who has been closely following the elections.
Prelimo, eu não é. Frelimo, Nyusi, Frelimo.
We've just had some voices of celebrations there. Does Filipe Nyusi's victory tell us anything, da Silva?
Well, Frelimo, the ruling party, is certainly in a party mode. They are very happy with the results. He won this year with 73% of the votes, and in 2014 it was 57%. So, yes, many reasons for Frelimo to celebrate these results. The opposition is not happy at all with this election, and they are accusing the police, for instance, of arresting their delegates at polling stations. They are also accusing Frelimo of carrying ballot boxes and votes outside of the system, so to speak. And by the way, it's not only the opposition saying that, it's also the civil society organizations in Mozambique that were observing these elections and that are now saying that these elections were not fair, were not free, and were not transparent.
Thanks for bringing that in, because we just want to hear from Fernando Mazanga, an Electoral Commission member.
Today we are witnessing here a national shame. The results that was announced by the president of the National Election Commission do not reflect the truth. It can be said that everything was done in secret because the eight members were not there.
Those were the statements of Fernando Mazanga, an Electoral Commission member in Mozambique. What is the way forward now for the opposition, who have said they don't recognize this election result?
The first thing they are going to try is to ask to scratch these results, basically, and call for new elections. And then following that, that is the first step. But what we also have to think about is also climate in Mozambique right now. There is a climate of intimidation, something that was there with an election observer that was killed in the Gaza province in the south, presumably by members of a special unit of the police. And also after the election, two people that were killed and several that were injured in Nacala Porto by the police.
I was talking there to my colleague from the DW Portuguese Africa Department, Guilherme Curaya da Silva.
And on our DW Africa Facebook page, C. Jabateli, you say, welcome to Africa, where incumbents win almost all the elections.
And Kelechi Kingsley says the main opposition party has an internal crisis within itself. So how can they win an election this time? They lost, no cheating.
Those are your comments there.
Thank you very much for those comments. We now head on to another story making headlines. The world has been reacting to the killing of Abubakar al-Baghdadi, leader of the so-called Islamic State, IS group. In Nigeria, there are divided opinions. Some security experts hail it as a crucial victory in the war against terrorism, while some have played it down, saying its significance is not important because the ideology still exists.
The years-long hunt for one of the world's most wanted and dangerous terrorists, al-Baghdadi, came to an end in Syria following a raid by U.S. Special Forces. Muhammad Al-Amin has more.
The news about the killing of IS leader Baghdadi has been received positively in many regions in Nigeria that have been adversely affected by Boko Haram crisis. Many people say the killing of IS leader is not just a win for the Middle East, but also for sub-Saharan Africa, where extremist groups like Al-Shabaab and Al-Qaeda are prevalent. Security experts in Nigeria like Aminu Suleiman have hailed the aim of the IS leader, who is said to have inspired violence, killings and rape around the world.
To be precise, it's a good development because killing the ISIS leader will demoralize the militants and it will affect them seriously. Even though that should not be the end of the fight, but I believe it's a good achievement and that will affect their ways of attack. If Baghdadi is killed, certainly all other heads of these militias, so they may face the same consequences.
Not all analysts agreed with Suleiman. Abubakar Baba says his death will certainly not change anything because his ideology remains alive.
By exiting him alone doesn't mean that the crisis is over. It's still afresh and others will still emanate who will take over the mantle of leadership and continue with what they are doing. So to me, by killing al-Baghdadi doesn't mean that the world will celebrate for his exit. We have to find a solution to the problem. The solution is to dialogue with those those who are piloting the affairs of the crisis.
This is also the view of some locals I talked to in Maiduguri, the birthplace of dreaded Boko Haram group. Muhammad Sani has for 10 years witnessed what the dreaded Boko Haram has done in his hometown.
Killing Osama bin Laden did not help in curbing terrorism. After killing Muhammad Yusuf Abubakar Shekau emerged, Shekau was said to have been killed several times, but nothing changed. All these killings of the leaders of terrorist groups is not the way out. Countries should put their heads together and find a solution to the problem.
Boko Haram and the splinter group now called ISWAP is yet to react to the killing of IS group leader Abubakar al-Baghdadi. IS has carried out multiple atrocities leading to thousands of deaths worldwide. The fugitive leader of the Islamic State group killed himself during a U.S. military operation in northwest Syria, according to President Donald Trump.
And that report was compiled by Alamin Mohammed in northeastern Nigeria.
Well, Crispin, we have been getting reactions not just from Nigeria this time, but from all over Africa. Baban Mariam says the problem is the Salafi ideology breeding intolerance and hatred. How can someone target you for death simply because you don't worship in the same manner?
And Edison Gabriel Amabi, you write, I hope that the expert has advised the Nigerian government to dialogue with Boko Haram.
Thank you very much for your comments. You can continue to debate there on DW Africa.
Now, the European Union agreed a three-month flexible delay on Monday to Britain's departure from the bloc. Reacting to that development, Prime Minister's Boris Johnson's spokesperson say that the UK ought to be leaving the EU by Thursday.
This is at that time that Britain is seeking an extension to Brexit. Former Prime Minister Theresa May had to postpone Britain's departure twice after she failed three times to get her deal ratified by Parliament. Isaac Mugabe has more on this.
The Brexit extension, which was granted on Monday by the EU member states, means that Britain will have to nominate a commissioner for the bloc's executive. The EU will have to propose a candidate for the new European Commission to Brussels by December 1st. This latest requirement goes against Prime Minister Boris Johnson's previous do-or-die pledge to leave the EU this week. European Union Commission spokeswoman Mina Andreeva told reporters that the ball is now in Johnson's court.
The draft decision to extend Article 50 contains three possible dates, one of which is even 1st of December, because that depends on when the withdrawal agreement will be ratified. So everything else, whether a candidate for commissioner will be needed or not for the 1st of December, we can discuss back then. I would only refer you to the current wording of the draft European Council decision, which is quite clear and which the United Kingdom is expected to agree on and adhere to, that the UK will maintain full rights and obligations in accordance with Article 50 of the Treaty on European Union, including the obligation to suggest a candidate for appointment as a member of the Commission.
EU Council President Donald Tusk described the extension in a tweet as a flextension, explaining that Britain could leave at any point before the deadline with Parliament's approval.
DW's there, Isaac Mugabe reporting. And we can see some comments on our DW Africa Facebook page. Kingson Amish, you write, Nigeria is a terrorist state. I'm not sure whether I agree with that statement, but that's your opinion.
Well, many are reacting to what is happening in Mozambique. The opposition has said they will not recognize the elections there, the election result. And we have Noah Deram saying in Uganda, it's the same. Thank you very much for your comments and keep it DW Africa. You are listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Crispin Wakideo. This program is streaming live on our DW Africa Facebook page, so do join us with your comments on the stories we are airing.
We have a lot coming up in the next 15 minutes. Health concerns as resistance to antibiotics rises in Kenya.
We have a scenario where pharmacies are dishing out antibiotics without any kind of judgment.
Don't miss out on that important story. But first, we head to Liberia, where each year at least 20,000 people register for the Diversity Visa Lottery Program, otherwise known as Green Card, with the hope of migrating to the United States.
Well, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs has become a beehive of activity as people rush to get a valid passport, which is now a new requirement to apply for the U.S. Diversity Lottery Program, or the Green Card, as you said, Crispin. So what's pushing more and more young people to leaving a country they call home? Our correspondent in Monrovia, Evelyn Pade, has more.
I'm at the local DV center. People here are busy registering for the U.S. Diversity Visa Lottery Program. I can see the broad smiles on those who have successfully filled the entrance forms. However, for those who do not have passport, it's a big blow. Many were unaware of this new requirement to apply for the lottery program. Nus Joseph is happy that he has just finished the registration. The 23-year-old says he has no prospect of finding a job in Liberia.
I really want to go to the States because I want to like...
I really want to go to the United States because I want to help my family and make life for myself. I left high school 2 years ago and there is no job opportunity for me. You know, people often say America is a gold mine where you go and get the gold and sell to make your life. I think this is true. When you get a job and earn some dollars, it's easy for you to sustain yourself and your family down here.
Sustain yourself and your family down in Liberia.
Nush is not the only one dreaming of a better life abroad. Francis Trekin is a father of three and a commercial motorcyclist. He has been attempting to apply for the green card several times. Trekin says he wants to leave Liberia to ensure a better future for his children.
I have three children now and everybody is in school.
I have three children right now and they are all in school. Due to the high school education fee right now, I cannot afford $50 for a passport. So what becomes of my children tomorrow? Last year, I registered along with my children but did not win. Though Liberia is a good country, America is more advanced. You can attain good education there to work and succeed.
You want to work hard to succeed.
Young Liberians are not the only Africans attempting to migrate to the U.S. and other countries abroad. A report by Afrobarometer this year indicated more than one in three Africans have considered immigrating mainly due to economic reasons. I asked a development expert, Luther Tappe, what this implies for Africa.
These are the issues, in my opinion, that African government need to focus on. Job creation is the only way you're going to keep Africans in Africa. People want to stay in their comfort zone where they'll be respected. But when you see them making such desperate move out of their native countries, it's a cause for alarm, and African leaders need to pay attention. They've gone to school, they've learned, and they want to improve their lives, but jobs are not there. Uncertainty staring straight at their faces. What would they do? Even if they love their country, they're not going to stay down here.
According to the International Organization for Migration, IOM, there was a moderate increase in the number of Africans moving outside the continent from around 16 to 17 million in the last 3 years.
Evelyn Pade reporting there from Monrovia.
And Zipporah, I was just thinking when this story was airing how many young people are desperate to apply for these visas. And yeah, 20,000, as we heard in Liberia, that's just one country in Africa. I'm sure there are many others all across the continent who wish to migrate to the US or to Europe or Asia or whatever. And I wonder who will remain back at home.
Yeah, that's what we've been talking about, brain drain. In fact, there is that guy who actually said that US is a gold mine where you are going to get gold, like money is everywhere.
Well, that's, as we know, that's not the truth, right? You can't, you have to be skilled. You have to be able to do something so that you can earn a living. Anyway, as we say, everybody has a right to migrate and to look for a better life. So, yeah, let's go on with another segment.
Health check.
Right, Crispin, and that segment is about health matters. The World Health Summit has kicked off in Berlin and will wrap up on Tuesday. It is the world's most prominent forum for addressing the most pressing health-related challenges on the planet. And there's one key health challenge this year the world is facing right now is the resistance to antibiotics.
That's right. And according to a British survey, 700,000 people die each year as a result to resistant bacteria. In Kenya, resistance to antibiotics is fast becoming a potential calamity for future generations. Wanjiku Maura with this report by Caroline Hoffman.
Rose Midecha is concerned about her small son. Five-month-old Collins has constant cold symptoms, a runny nose and a cough.
I am worried because he is always sick like this, and I don't know why.
Rose gives her son Collins antibiotics, even though they only briefly ease the symptoms. That's why she gives him one after the other. She doesn't know what else to do. Rose gets the antibiotics cheaply from a retailer around the corner and without prescription. The retailer has no pharmaceutical training.
I bought antibiotics at the pharmacy. When they were finished, he was still sick, so I bought new antibiotics. I couldn't go to the hospital.
Rose and her two children live in Mathare, a slum in the capital, Nairobi. She is a household help and has to work every day to pay for food, childcare, and her rent. She cannot afford hospital care. The hygienic conditions in Nairobi's poor neighborhoods are dismal. Rubbish and excrement clutter the paths. Bacteria easily multiply and spread, leading to various illnesses. Besides the huge consumption of antibiotics, in poorer community, their quality is often poor, their dose too low, and they are used for the wrong illnesses. All of which contributes to bacterial antibiotic resistance. Sam Karaoke is a researcher at the Kenya Medical Research Institute. He says the war on antibiotic resistance must start at ground zero.
If we are able to safeguard the issue of antibiotic resistance at the local level, then it means then when we export humans or we export ourselves during travel, we are not taking bugs from one place to another and vice versa. So we must act locally to be able to affect the global aspects of antibiotic resistance.
Kenya's hospitals have been aware of the growing problem for years. At Kijabe Hospital, an increasing number of resistant bacteria are showing up. The hospital has now developed new standards for treatment. Here's Dr. George Otieno at Kijabe Hospital.
Especially in Kenya, we have a scenario where pharmacies are dishing out antibiotics without any kind of judgment. Number two, veterinary medicine and also animal farming.
2 years ago, the government implemented a national action plan. It aims to boost awareness of antibiotic use and the requirement of a prescription. But not much will change in the slums. The drugs are easily available.
And that report was written by Caroline Hoffman.
Ismail Karemi, writing to us from Kenya, says government should close down unlicensed drugstores and pharmacies, and they should subsidize health costs and medications in hospitals so that people can afford health coverage.
And Yue Kung Kon writes, everything is risky here. Even big hospitals give false diagnoses. Keep those comments coming on our DW Africa Facebook page.
Africa Link. Sport.
Now, there is a new man in charge of Ghanaian football. Kurt Okraku defeated five contenders to take up the mantle of reforming how soccer is run in the West African nation.
Now, Crispin, there's something we all remember. Ghana's football body was dealt a severe blow after investigative journalist Anas Arimai Anas aired a documentary showing the former football chief accepting a bribe. Do you remember that video? It was
I do remember that story
media,
as well.
Yes. Isaac Alechi now reports there is a glimmer of hope with the new administration.
Ghanaian football supporters cheered their teams at a match in the capital Accra. Such scenes have been rare after the country's football association was plunged into a corruption scandal. An investigative documentary implicated former head of Ghana's football association, Kwesi Nyantechi, and other officials in bribery to influence matches and football activities. After FIFA banned him, the country has been without a football president for months. All that changed when football delegates finally elected a new president at a congress in Accra. A local football club owner, Ket Okraku, beat other five contenders to take up the mantle to rebuild the dented image of Ghanaian football.
I will lead Ekusie to build an amazing working ethic at the Football Association, at the Executive Council inclusive. We would ensure that we will start to develop the game again right from the grassroots.
Following the scandal, many Ghanaian football lovers lost faith with those in charge of leading the country's football. These two fans told me a lot needs to be done now to regain that trust.
It's all about accountability and probably transparency. All of us are football loving people as a nation as well. First, you should probably tackle the issue of corruption.
We are all hungry for Ghana football to come back, and I think now is the time for the GFA committee to sit down and then bring back our football, which we all need it to be back.
Nana Kweku Ajimain, a sports analyst, says nice words by the new football chief alone would not be enough. He needs to tackle graft head-on, and all football activities must be conducted with the utmost transparency.
It's integrity check time. We know where that is. It's on the floor. We need to rebuild that internally and externally. We have to be inclusive internally and externally, and transparency and accountability will go a very long way for the future in terms of the future of Ghanaian football. If corruption on the pitch is no good and is to be condemned and must be wiped out, corruption off the pitch is also the same. It must be wiped out.
All eyes will now be on the new football executives as Ghana's football seeks to reclaim its image, and hopefully the jubilation on pitches will continue.
Isaac Kalechi, they are reporting from Accra, Ghana.
Now let's leave the world of sports. Now, two international human rights groups on Monday criticized Tanzanian President John Magufuli as stifling independent journalism and severely restricting the activities of non-governmental organizations. We've had comments from you, one here from Charles. Charles, you write, dissenting voices go with dissenting ideas, which lead to no good developmental results. As much as he's doing his very best to uplift his people and country, so be it.
Well, the question was, can Magufuli redeem himself and allow dissenting voices ahead of the crucial election? And Ben Bije also says he misuses his power and mainly to impose fear among the people as well as destroying other political parties.
And there's an interesting one from Kay Lukuni, and you write, if each Tanzanian could be given a chance to suggest extending Magufuli's presidency, I swear to you, 90% will say yes. Despite his weaknesses, he's doing his best.
Well, Crispin, that is quite a paradox, how the mix is.
It is an interesting one in Tanzania. Well, some people hate him, some people really like him.
And Mohamed Hassan adds his voice and says, John Magufuli along with Kagame are the best presidents any African country can dream of. After Magufuli took over, Tanzania level of corruption and embezzling has been curtailed. That is why the long-standing thieves trying to defame the president. That is his opinion, of course.
That's true. And Peter Kimodo, you write, the best president of my time as regards to fighting corruption and spearheading development. He's doing fine, he writes. The West wants to distract our attention. We look as if he is punishing the media.
You can also join the debate on DW Africa. That is it for it now. I am Zipora Nyambura.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for mind.